500 years ago, he washed ashore the sole survivor of a shipwreck. And upon the skull of the man who killed his dad, he said, I'm mad, I must eradicate piracy, injustice and cruelty, and all my sons will follow me. So evildoers will believe that this man cannot die.
G'day everyone, this is Expand the Phantom Podcast. Our website is chroniclechamber.com and you can subscribe to our podcast via YouTube or Spotify or pretty well whatever podcast app you're listening to us through now. Please, if you've got the capacity in that app, make sure you give us a rating and especially tell a fellow Phantom fan about us. This is episode 256 and today we're getting excited about the news recently, or the little snippet of news that came out confirming that King Features Syndicate, the official on their official website, they confirmed that a new series, a new entertainment series featuring the Phantom is in development, which we're all very excited about. Haven't had any Phantom on our TV since Phantom 2040, Defenders of the Earth, the sci-fi series, which was very short-lived and wildly unappreciated, and of course the Phantom movie featuring Billy Zane, but nothing for a long time. And in an era where superhero movies are really much, they're almost becoming passe, the Phantom has somehow missed out. Ant-Man's got 3 movies, but the Phantom's got none. What's going on? So the news has given us a little snippet of hope that something's going to come out, and obviously with that very small amount of notice, we don't know very much at all, but it's not going to stop us from speculating wildly about what we'd like to see. And so for big news like this, it's a big podcast. We've got Chronicle Chamber members from all over the world to share in the excitement. So I'm obviously from Queensland. My name's Dan Fraser. I'm joined by regular Jermaine Parker from Western Australia. How are you, Germ?
Very good. Very excited about this news. We've been digging and sniffing around like grubby little journalists for this story for a little while. So it was a lot of excitement to be able to break the news on our website. And I'm been looking forward to having this chat. Really looking forward to it.
Very good. Sticking in Australia and from Victoria, Duncan Munro stepping in. Stephen's not able to make it, but Duncan has more than ably stepped in as his representative, if you like, from the southern state of Australia. How are you, Duncan?
As you were, gentlemen, thanks for having me in to replace Stephen temporarily. I'm more than happy to have a nap partway through the podcast to keep with tradition.
Wonderful. We'll move into a further afield, though. I said international, and we've got Ankit Mitra from India. How are you, Ankit? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity to come here. And it's very exciting, and I've been doing well. And so, I am really looking forward to have the discussion because, you know, this has been on, like, I think every fan's mind, like, wanting to see the Phantom. And in India, we literally have bootleg Phantoms, like, you know, references thrown since my childhood in, like, TV series and all stuff that was never licensed. But, like, you know, you saw that stuff there, so you can understand how much, you know, it means.
Awesome. It'd be fantastic to hear what you think a Phantom series should look like. And of course, we couldn't do an international Phantom meeting without a representative from Sweden. And Mikael Lick has joined us tonight. How are you, Mikael?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I'm also looking forward to the TV series, but it's like with a bit of fright in mind that not all TV series comes out as good as you want them to be.
Well, I guess if it becomes a dud, we can say, well, I should listen to the podcast.
Yeah, true.
I can only imagine that King Features are going to be listening carefully to us, because the premise that we've come up with, look, we know nothing, and by nothing I mean absolutely nothing, about what this series is going to actually look like. We've got that one sentence of news that it's in development.
And we had to hunt for that as well. It was really hidden away.
Yes, it's a line buried about halfway through their Phantom fact sheet. So, look, we don't know anything about what's going on, but what we've decided to do is to make this podcast a pitch meeting that we would have with King Features, where each of us pitch our own Phantom show idea to the showrunners, hoping to get our idea greenlit for the series. And I'm really interested in what we're going to come up with, because we've gone from all over the world, lots of different experience levels, lots of different favourite things about the Phantom amongst the group that we've got here on the pod. And I'm really keen to hear what we would do if we were put in charge of the Phantom show. So what we're going to do is we're going to go around the grounds and take it in turns to pitch our show idea. Basically, each person will get a short period of time, 5 minutes or so, to just go and be uninterrupted as they share their idea for the series, talk about whatever it is that they've come up with regards to what the series should look like. And at the end of each person's pitch, there'll be a quick little Q&A session with a maximum of one question from each of the other four people to try and keep things moving along. So, guys, as you're listening to other people's pitches, make sure you jot down any ideas and then pick your best question at the end. We'll go from there. And at the end, we'll have a bit of a chat about what we've come up with, some general questions that sort of have come up over the course of the conversation and all the rest of it. Not really sure what that'll look like, but I'm sure it'll be entertaining at the end. So that's it. That's what we're doing. Any comments before we launch into it?
Make sure the listeners, we want your feedback as well. So whether you're on social media, emails, Patreon, however you get in contact with us, even if it's just a private message to Ankit and say, Ankit, you are a fool, make sure you give us your feedback. Sorry, Ankit, you're there. You're on the screen, so you're the one I'll get to pick on. But we want fans' opinion. And then if you think you've got a better pitch, let us know. Put it on social media. This will be on, you know, the podcast will be all over social media, on YouTube and everything. So put your pitch on there as well, or tell us what ideas you like and stuff like that. Let's make some noise, because, and then hopefully something good might happen.
Righto. So let's go around then and share our pitches. And yeah, listeners, if you want to, as Germ said, get involved with the conversation afterwards, because that's what we need to be doing. So, there's only one of the five of us that I'm aware of, unless someone's using a pseudonym, who has got a story published in a Phantom comic. And I think, Duncan, it might be appropriate to lead with you as our most professional author in the room. Is that all right?
What could possibly go wrong then? All right, so here we go. So I initially toyed around with actually doing an adult animation pitch, but instead I've gone with a live action series, looking for 10 episodes with 50-minute episodes in the first season. And the setting that I've gone for is in the near future. So it resembles present day, but it's got updates for fashion, tech, and vehicles that are sort of just over the horizon or are being done now, but it's not a sci-fi. It's grounded in reality, even though I'm getting a bit out there, as we'll see with the story. And I've called it Defender's Legacy. And the tagline is, some heroes are born, some are made, and for some, it's inherited. And the kind of mood that I'm going for is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. meets Magnum P.I., the new Magnum P.I., not the Tom Selleck, the big mustache. And I'll go quickly through what I pitched for the first episode and then how I steer the season going. So Kit Walker, who is not the Phantom yet, in his early 20s, and his African-American training officer / best friend, Romeo, in his late 20s, are New York City police officers. And so Kit's done a criminology degree at university. He's joined the NYPD. He's honing his skills being an investigator, learning how to, you know, read criminals and talk to people in one of the biggest police services in the world. And we open on a chase scene as they're coming on a corporate robbery in the Wall Street district. So lots of gunfire and machine guns going off in the SWAT team, and the police cars get there and uniformed cops turn up, and among them is Kit and Romeo. And we start to see through this opening scene that Kit really has that Phantom training. He's outrunning everyone. He's making quippy calls. He's working well with Romeo together. And they end up chasing the main bad guys. Their car's disabled, and Kit borrows a mounted police horse and runs through the streets of New York and finishes with a big fight scene where he takes them out on the Brooklyn Bridge. And that's the opening scene. That's the opening part of the show, and then the credits come on. And then when he gets home, Kit gets to his apartment and he finds that there's this old African man that he knows standing in his lounge room. And that we find that that's Duran, who's from the band.
and he's standing there stoically in the living room, and he's bringing the news to Kit that his father is missing and presumed dead. So Kit goes to Romeo and says that my father was last seen looking for bad guys in Haiti. I'm going looking for him. And Romeo insists on going with him. So then they go to the airport to get on a plane. And there's lots of news reports peppered through the episode that make reference to a planned manned space flight by a private enterprise-run organization that's working with the military, with the government. And it's run by a tech billionaire, megalomaniac, former US president, Sienna Ming, who's an Asian-American woman in her 30s. Now, the flight is scheduled to launch the world's first manned space fleet, like space patrols to protect the communications and military satellites and space stations orbiting the Earth, because they're afraid of kinetic action from other countries trying to take out some of the world's communications and satellite resources up in space. And so that's going on in the background. We're getting fed those bits of that story about those two, about that character and about that launch. And Kit and Romeo make a few comments about, you know, wouldn't it be great to join the space fleet? Now, while they're at the airport, they meet this charming, beautiful woman whose name is Savannah, and she's an Indian female in her 20s. And while she's initially charming, she turns out to be a con artist and she rips them off. They end up finding out that she's done that, get the money back. They let her go, but only to find that when they board the plane, she's seated across from them on the plane. When the plane lands in Florida, there's a stopover where they change to an international flight. While they're moving through the airport, they come across an international jewelry shipment is going through the airport where they're transferring, heavily armed guards are transferring a lot of jewels from a plane onto a armored car. And a crew shows up to try and steal to do a heist and steal the jewels, and there's a big gunfight. Again, Kit and Romeo spring into action and resolve that. While they're doing it, they find Savannah taking the opportunity to steal the jewels from the heist while no one's looking, even though there's some injured guards nearby. And we see her have a change of character. So she starts off being a bit shady, but then we see that she surrenders the jewels in order to save some of the guards, and she becomes a bit redeemable. And then there's this massive gunfight through the airport. We see Kit's amazing gun accuracy and marksmanship with his gun handling, and a great hand-to-hand fight across the Orlando airport. Now, as the episode finishes, the police and emergency services pour over everywhere, and the characters all line back up to go through the security screening point to get back onto the flight to go to Haiti, and Savannah ends up coming with them. And then we see a bit of a romance blossoming between Romeo and Savannah as they're in the queue. And then Kit's sort of in the TSA line noticing that. As he goes through the screening point, the TSA officer calls him back. And as he comes back to the tray, they said, "You left something in the tray." And he looks, and there's something that wasn't there before, and it's a little leather case. And he's initially confused. He doesn't recognize it. But as he opens it up, we see that it's a leather case, velvet mark ring. And he looks around to see who's dropped that off for him, and he can't see. And the camera pans back as this big crowd mills around him, and he's left not knowing who's done that. And that's the end of the first episode. And the series would continue as those three unveil the plot to sabotage that planned space fleet launch. And while they're doing that, they meet this really outgoing astronaut, Lieutenant Commander Steve Gordon, who's a guy in his 30s, and Kit recognises him from university as someone that was a bit older than him, and they fenced together. And the Lieutenant Commander had the nickname Flash because of his swordsmanship and because of the way that he was with women. And the series takes the four of them on a quest to uncover and foil the sabotage operation. And they go around the Gulf of Mexico, the swamps of Florida, a few locations around there, and the privately owned space station that's owned by this Sienna Ming. A running thread through the series is Kit's quest to learn of his father's actual fate, but he keeps getting dragged into to trying to find out who's trying to sabotage the space mission. And he keeps receiving mysterious help along the way, and that's revealed through the series to be acolytes from the Bandar region of Africa who have come over in support of him, knowing that he's supposed to take over the mantle of the Phantom. And through them, he starts to receive a few hints about where his father might have gone. And this Kit is the 24th Phantom. And in one of the episodes, his grandmother, Heloise, makes an appearance when he's feeling a bit low and having a few self-doubts. Romeo is revealed to be Lothar's grandson. And Lieutenant Commander Gordon is the original Flash Gordon. So this is the origin story for a new version of Flash Gordon. And Savannah is a descendant of the Mandrake family. So through several generations, all those illusionist secrets that Mandrake has passed down have become used for grift and swindle, and she's a bit of a master manipulator, and she's good at, you know, a bit of a mentalist. She's good at reading people's minds and absolute con artist, and she's able to, through the power of suggestion, make people do what she wants them to do. And she becomes a romantic interest for Romeo. Kit does wear the Phantom costume, but it sort of evolves through the story where he's got to defeat the security system at the space station. So he puts on this a thermal resistant suit, which just happens to be purple, and it's a full body suit, so it's enabled him to infiltrate the space station, and he modifies the suit to suit him. So it's not quite the sci-fi redo of the suit, which still looks like the Phantom suit that we're used to, but it's got a practical application as well. And he starts to learn some of those lessons about that the Phantoms have learned before him. So it finishes off with they save the space launch, and it turns out that Ming is a bad person, and she's just after more wealth and power. And it ends on the final episode where Kit and the others arrive in Haiti, and they're led to a warehouse by the water registered to the Sing Trading Company, where it's clear that a big gun battle has gone on a few weeks before. Local authorities just dismissed it as gangland warfare, but Kit and the others discover a bloodied Phantom belt that's looks like the Phantom's been mortally wounded and probably died. So Kit's overcome with grief and blames himself for not coming sooner and for being selfish. He starts to blame, he thinks it's his fault. And in the final moments of the episode, Savannah discovers evidence that the Phantom might have survived and been taken captive by this criminal syndicate. And there's the final scene is this dynamic shot looking out across the Caribbean as the four characters are there, in the sunlight, looking very heroic and braced for further adventures. The casting that I went into with this is Kit Walker / the Phantom is Nicholas Holt. So he's in the Mission Impossible film that comes out this month, Mission Impossible Reckoning. And I wanted to be a young Phantom. He's still young. He's taking over. He's going to make mistakes. And to try and appeal to a youthful audience, so they've got someone to identify with. What's the next one you've got on there? That is my Romeo, LeVar Romeo. So that's Jay Lee. You might have recognised him from The Orville. That is Anthony Starr. So he's from The Boys. He plays, what is that character's name? From the Outlander. He plays He plays it perfect because he looks like that Superman chiseled jaw, but he's actually a bad guy in The Boys. But I think equally he'd be a great Flash. So he's a bit older than the others because he's got to have that rank and that seniority to be the Flash Gordon character. I think there's scope for the series to follow him into space. Alia Bhatt, Ankit, if I'm getting that name right. And I thought she'd be a great Savannah. So she's the descendant of Mandrake. And Jermaine, I have to correct me. What was Mandrake's adopted kid in the Defenders cartoon? He had a young boy that was an adopted kid. So there's scope for the family to get a bit divided there, and the family line to go into India.
It was Sheen, someone like
Kashin. Kashin, yeah, something like that. Yeah. Well done. Cool. And then you don't have a Mandrake. Oh, not a Mandrake, a old Grand.
Duran. So I like Dunkit's Forrest Whitaker. I need someone like that with that gravitas to be delivering such heavy news to Kit. And as the series went on, that character would be important to be a a source of guidance and counsel to him that knew his father.
If we've each got a question to put to Duncan to clarify something or to whatever it might be.
So I have a question, which I think is main, like, you know, a lot of folks in their head when they think like they're not like those who are like hardcore, like, you know, comic fans, especially the older ones, maybe I'm talking about Indians and all. They're still not in the, you know, watching that many Netflix series and all of that. So their whole idea when they hear of a live action Phantom is going to be like, you know, the Billy Zane reference, when he's going to ride the horse, like these little soft things, you know, they want to see more Phantom. Now, this is a very good pitch, like very honestly, it blew my mind. Like, I wouldn't see it anyhow. Like, this is exactly what I would feel works for, you know, contemporary times. But how are you going to balance that idea of, you know, the old school fans getting to see the Phantom and see those images? Will there be like flashbacks and everything, you know, which take things back, at least give them that, that, you know, they want to see cosplay practically, which, you know, so that kind of stuff. So how are you going to, mm-hmm, you know, balance that? Will there be enough of it in the show or something, or will it be like truly contemporary stuff?
That's a great question. And the two ways I propose to pitch this in this fictitious story that is never going to happen is we're seeing him develop as the Phantom. So we're seeing the rings in the first episode. Then we start to see the costume at the end of the second episode. And then in the third episode, we start looking at flashbacks back to him training with his dad or a previous Phantom. And so the other thing I toyed with was but doesn't work for the first episode, is if there's the pre-credit sequence is actually a flashback to him seeing his father, the Phantom, doing stuff in the jungle or fighting pirates or whatever, and he's on the outskirts and seeing that, but that lesson that he learns there is relevant in the episode story. And so I think it should be peppered with some nostalgia back for the fans that are traditional, but it's also targeted at bringing a new audience in that will, but looking at the spirit of the Phantom, the character. That's why even when he's a cop at the start in that first series, he's basically the Phantom in a cop uniform. He's still making smart aleck comments. He's doing it with ease. He's doing that, you know, shooting guns out of people's hands and that sort of marksmanship. And he jumps onto the horse and rides through the city when everyone else is, you know, falling over themselves to try and take out these high-tech criminals. So I think there's the spirit of the character will be the same, and I think that there'll be enough. I would put in flashbacks back to that show the Phantom in the traditional costume on the horse in the jungle doing all those settings that you're talking about.
I would probably just ask Duncan what sort of you've pitched this as the 24th Phantom, and that can still be in the near future given timelines and all the rest of it. I think it probably should have been, you know, if Lee Falk was following a calendar, it probably would have been the 24th or 25th Phantom by now. What sort of advantages do you think that or freedoms do you get from setting it as a 24th Phantom, not your 21st, that most people might be expecting?
A couple of reasons I did that. One of them was it's time. The other one was if I want to do the things like I just talked to Unky the Phantom in the 30s and 40s as the 21st, maybe the 50s, and then 60s, 70s, 80s as Kit, like the 22nd Phantom, and that leaves the 23rd in the middle, and then that's where we're sort of saying that it's in the sort of over the horizon with the 24th coming. So, but it also gives the opportunity to give this Kit a love interest, his own faults, develop his own character a little bit, and to be able to do that the same with the other King Features properties with Flash and Mandrake and everything, without still preserving the stories that everyone else loves about those characters. So if we are bringing legacy people in to watch the material, we're not touching their stories. It's not the 21st Phantom, it's the 24th, which has hardly been dealt with. It's not Mandrake, it's Mandrake's granddaughter. It's not Lothar, it's Lothar's grandson, and I've said it's Flash because I couldn't make it work in another way.
Yep.
No, that timeline does work for Flash. So, yeah, cool. Very good. Well, that's a very impressive way to kick us off. Directors taking your notes under advisement, and would ask you to wait in the ante room while we discuss your idea and hear from some other pitches. Thank you very much, Duncan, for your time. now, Ankit.
I saw JJ Abrams out there. Is he coming?
He's got some ideas. He's thrown us a few things, and we'll take him under advisement. But you're a very solid performer so far. All right, Ankit, you drew on the short straw in terms of following Duncan. Can you take us through your pitch, mate?
Okay, so yeah, that this is a little bit very intimidating. I had no idea, I kind of dug my own grave, following Duncan, because his pitch was just mind-blowing. When he was going through it, I was like, wow, I wish I thought of all of this. Anyway, so my pitch is going to be a little bit, I don't think it's in the same league, but I don't really have, I'll just be, my disclaimer in the beginning is I don't have specific actors in mind. I have more so to me, the idea of Phantom for me, my pitch revolves around, again, to get it straight, I'm not going on the 21st Phantom, because I don't think it's going to help with the timeline. It'll get muddied up, especially in a web series. And another thing is, I want to explore a universe of the Phantom which is not so contemporary, also where I update him into the city and cityscape and all of it, because there is a danger for me where it becomes a crime show with references, how Elementary was, which was a great show. It was Sherlock Holmes, but it was very different. New York, everything. Whereas I know in a way people still, they are way more connected to seeing, say, Jeremy Brett still in that Victorian era. So how can you marry them both? So my pitch, is more so of a little futuristic, a little dystopian. And that's very evident from the kind of stuff I like. So my idea is this happens and in the main credits, when the thing is rolled, you get to know that, the world has already had a nuclear war and everything's kind of gone. So high tech, people are back, I won't say cavemen, but it's something like Mad Max. Now the, Australians will, understand that even better, what I'm talking about. But if you see Fury Road and all of those places, it's something like that. So the world is lawless. There are as pirates and this and that, tribes. Practically divided as tribes, and they have water is a scarce resource. So all of this, and people are practically it's like an open jungle. It's like a free for all. So jungle without real trees and this and that, where everything is maybe there is the tribe which holds control of the food, the tribe which holds control of the water, tribe which holds control of petroleum and things like that, and guns and this and that. And then there is obviously infighting, and then there is somebody trying, there are some factions trying to, unify. But the whole thing is, there's cruelty. Cruelty is rampant everywhere, because humanity is pretty much everybody's scraps, they're surviving and this and that. So I don't know how many of you have seen Fist of the North Star, the anime, or read the manga. It's very similar in a way. The thing is there, but it also helps us see a situation where, it's like a back to the basics jungle situation. So my whole pitch starts off with the first thing that is established. This is a very desert region and all of it. And there is a shipment of refugees, people with very old automobiles with gas thing, traveling and trying to get some food and things across. And then they are overrun by, very savage, biker type, Mad Max people who are race, and they just completely, ravage them and loot them and everything. And they've taken their loot and they're now, celebrating back in their camp and all of it. And we get a hint of how, the thing is. And when they're celebrating back in the camp or something, it's their thing. Okay, so they're counting their what their spoils are and all of it. And very soon, they think smells some weird dead animal over here, get in here and all of that. And then you see one of them has started to hallucinate. They're seeing something, strange, like a beastly skull, something they're getting disoriented, what's happening. Then they smell, and there's a gas and all of it. And in that darkness, we see people getting basically the Phantom comes and takes them apart, but he's not completely shown. It's like smell gases and like things happening, and it's just like chaos. And then finally, you know, all that spoils and all of that is like, you know, taken and all of it. And then, you know, but more will be the whole focus will be more on a band of survivors who are trying to establish their own little, you know, village or something like that. Now it's their group, you know, they're trying to survive, and they have like this, and people trying to come in. Like, these are like not savages, but these are more so like in general people who just want to survive, who want to farm, like, you know, little crops are growing and stuff like that. And then we see towards the end, towards the end of that first episode, that, you know, finally, like, the guy, like, you know, with the, like, he's wearing a lot of, like a robe. Like, you know, like how, say, Obi-Wan Kenobi was in the very first Star Wars movie. Like, he's got a hood and everything. When he takes it off, you see that classic Phantom mask. But he's got other stuff, and he's carrying, like, pouches and all of it. He has guns, but he doesn't really use them much because bullets are really scarce. And, he comes, like, he gets in his little cave over there, and he's, like, you know, bandaging him up, and he's, like, these savages get worse and worse. He's having a conversation, and then you see he's having a conversation, but, like, not like a dwarf, but because of all the radiation and all of that, there are some people who were born mutant, like, you know, their arm, they're short, or, like, they're various deformities. Some could be very tall. But since they were outcasts, because they didn't look like normal humans, you know, they banded together, and they are, like, that. They will be, like, you know, that thing of the Bandar, and since they have, like, really nowhere to go, they are like the support group for this Phantom. And from his ancestors, because, you know, the electronics went haywire, all the chronicles and everything remained. So all the special herbs that Guran had made for healing and this and that and all that stuff, now he uses his terrain and hallucinogens to his advantage. He doesn't kill them, but he knows very well how to come across as a legend of a man who cannot die. So you hear the whispers of, you know, that one place of that place is like haunted, when that stretch of land between like 2-3, you know, settlements, that place, you know, anything happens or anything like that, there is the spirit of this man who will not die. There's a ghost who walks, you know, who's going to protect them or things like that. You know, so that will be the main premise. And accordingly, we will, like, you know, expand on the episodes. Like, you know, you'll have like about 8 episodes or something. And to show that, you know, there are warlords on all of them, we'll pick one of the warlords as, you know, like the more powerful one, who's vocal, who's not scared, who wants to, like, go out there and face the Phantom and this and that. And the final episode, we will have that kind of proper showdown where, and we will call that tribe will probably be the Wasaka tribe, who's not afraid, like, who feel that the Phantom have, you know, this legend was ours, and it was appropriated by somebody else, and there so that man who survived, like, he had heard the tales of the Wasaka demon, and then he wants to go there and, you know, claim it, and so that final battle will be there, like, when happening. And Phantom, just like, you know, how what happened in, I don't know if you guys have read The Dark Knight Returns and all of it. So the Phantom, to establish the law of the jungle in that last episode, he will fight that warlord in the middle, in front where the other tribes and everybody is looking, and actually break him there. Like, not kill him, but, like, you know, like what Bane does, like, break his back, literally, like that. And that is the establishment of the Phantom law in that. So that is basically my pitch. And the only person I had thought, like, you know, was Guran, was like Forest Whitaker, but, like, I think because they'll all be deformed and this and that, it doesn't have to be even Guran. It can be like a different name. It could be Kipua, something like that. We'll give it a bit more space to, you know, the characters whom not been explored. And this will again be called Crit, but I think you know, we will make reference to Standish and all of that when he's slipping through the books and all of it. And so, yeah, so that's basically my idea of how I want the Phantom to be. Now, as a cast actor, I would want somebody who looks a little bit grizzled, somebody who's had, like, he's not a very young Phantom also. He is Phantom, but he'll be a little bit more lean and a bit shrewd. He won't be a big guy, but he knows how to, you know, pull his weights. And also, I thought currently how James Marsden looks now, not when he was playing Cyclops, I think he has it in him. And if you look at the actor whom Duncan mentioned to be a young kid, you'll see James Marsden kind of looks like him if he's kind of older. James Marsden kind of looks like him if he's older, the current, you know, because he's got a little bit of wrinkles and everything now showing. So yeah, that the James Marsden would be the person I would think of to play the Phantom in a, such a scenario. And since the other characters, everything, they will all be references little bit from here and there. And for the cosplay lovers and everything, there will obviously be like a old costume, which, you know, and he look at it and it's like, yeah, great, but, you know, wearing something like that when the sun is like this, it'll just might as well, you know, the ghost to the man who cannot die won't even survive 5 minutes in that suit in the sun, like that. You know, just make some comments like that. Yeah, so you know, he and yeah, he will have that humor, he will have, but he will have that little bit of that sardonic twist just to, you know, show the how the world has changed, that it is a very dystopian world, and it's a jungle, but it's not really that lush jungle and everything that was. Yeah, so that's basically my pitch for it. But yeah, it ensures that you really don't get a second season, so it's going to be like a one season, one solid show, like a thing. That's
Okay. Very good. Thanks. And keep that the dystopian idea is very interesting. Let's go around. Questions, team.
So, Ankit, I guess very similar question as what you asked, Duncan. Do you think, like, obviously there's that sci-fi element, probably a little bit more sci-fi. Do you think older fans will be able to handle their Phantom in that sci-fi element?
For the older fans, you know, the point is like there will be references and everything for what is happening. But very honestly, I am really not thinking much to cater to the older fans in terms like if you want to read the Phantom, you know, riding a horse in the middle of a jungle, you'll be the only one wanting to read him. None of the younger fans are going to turn up. Okay. So it would be better in a way, you know, to give them something fresh. And to make them happy, there will always be references so that they don't feel left out completely. Like this,
so not there a will new... be those tropes, so, the so elements. Even,
for an example, like he will wear the hood, you know, the hood with the thing, because that's his main thing. And he will wear that, and in that, like the final confrontation, he will come. And the situation will be such that it will probably be the monsoon. Like if finally it's raining after maybe decades of never having a rain. So that's like rebirth is happening. So he can actually wear that practical suit of his ancestors. And he said, you know, this is the thing. The Wasaka people are coming in. So in that last situation, we'll give them that money shot, as they call it, you know.
Yep.
So okay. They'll get that thing. So I think they will. It's just that.
Yep. Any other questions? Duncan, Dan? Mikhail?
Yeah, I like how you're using that post-apocalyptic setting to give an excuse for all the old jungle sayings, like to get that legend of him being the man who cannot die, and you're turning the power dynamic, all the things that make him outdated and potentially anachronistic in now, by putting it in the future, but where like bullets are rare. So him being really accurate with his shooting and not wanting to kill anybody would fit in with that that world. That's really good. What other characters, I might be putting it on the spot, but what other characters do you think there's the potential to create that would either be against the Phantom or join him in that space? Maybe some of those untouchable people that you talked about as his helpers, or someone else that he would be a regular appearance in the series. Who else is he with? Who's he helping or who's he fighting against?
I would personally say like the main person who would help him would be like somebody who's like a little like a dwarf, but he has a little bit of thing, like what you said, deformities and all. And we can call him Guran. I actually wanted to call him Kipwa. I didn't want to call him Guran because I wanted to show that, you know, it has passed. That mantle has passed. That
Kipwa.
Yeah, I wanted to sound Kipwa. And also in this middle, I want to show that there in like the story should not just be him. He should be like I always see it as Phantom should be an overarching legend. It should not be like his biography. Like you shouldn't see everything from his point of view. So my basic narrative will be around like these settlers who are trying to create this little bit of order. While you know the other factions are there, and amongst them, some of them where we get the basic idea of the jungle patrol coming in. You know, we'll have a weeks. We will have a you know Worubu. Like these people, they will be there. we are not going to like they're not we're not going to call them expressly that they are their descendants, but they will be like an African American, like who's a very strong, like, you know, there will be a Warugu who will be like one of the settlers who's much more determined, who's willing to take the fight to the other guys. Like, he probably, like, one of the settlers coming in and they are besieged by them, and you see like two of these people, you know, Weeks and Warugu, two friends from this thing, actually like fight them out. They have guns, or like they're resourceful, they have some explosive or something, and they're like, you know, we can't just be like sitting ducks to these people. They build fences, and so they slowly a little bit braver. A group of folks also, you know, assemble there, and the Phantom helps them from time to time, and they go to a place, like one of them stumbles into this, and the Phantom knows that he's not malicious, so he communicates with them, you know, from the from that thing, and he's like, where the hell, like say suppose one of these days, like as a settler, he's like, you know, finding, rummaging for things, and he comes across this, and Kit has been like probably like looking at him for a long time and now wants to communicate with him. So while he's like trying to get a bit of water and all, he starts again hallucinating because he's been, you know, because the Phantom never wants to come in front of him. It's like the unknown commander kind of a thing, and then talks to him and then tells him, okay, you bring this, and there is a shipment of things that these guys are going with, guns, you know, this warlord is trafficking this much guns to this warlord for, why don't you guys, you know, you turn the tables on them and, you know, take it from them on the way passage. So he's slowly building this like jungle patrol thing also on the sidelines, while he will give the systemic help by, you know, when the time comes, when he say he will do what is required to, you know, do his job as the Phantom. So yeah, that's how. So yeah, I do have that plan, but since it was more Phantoms, I just wanted to say how the Phantoms thing will be established. The rest, it is easier to like slowly, you know, expand up.
Ankit, I think my question was along similar lines. You may have explained it a little bit there, but I guess very specifically, what about do you see, and maybe given that you're not in the giving the Phantom's point of view in this a lot of the time, which I actually quite like, how he just appears when he's needed, that sort of thing. But do you foresee like a love interest or a family or anything like that for your Phantom?
Well, not really love interest, but you see his empathy and you see his thing, like, you know, he's... I won't say like there will be one episode where he will have to, like, you know, like say he's very wounded just before, like say out of the say 8 episodes we have, like episode 6 or something, where he's already had like a first brush with like the big warlord who's not afraid of him, whose hallucinogens don't work on him, and he realizes why, because he's got immunity. He's also, you know, got these old jungle things, or like he's new this, he's aware, and he wants to, you know, break the myth of the Phantom, and here's the Phantom trying to establish that. So when he's come back and he's trying to heal, so then, like, you know, they talk about, you know, those mutants, they talk about, you know, you should learn from your ancestors, and he talks, there's maybe soliloquy and that kind of stuff. So his family is basically those folk, you know, the Bandar who are helping him and all of that. And he learns from that mistake, the how to approach this. And then he learns that, you know, I can't always fight completely from the shadows. There has to be a reason where, like, you know, I have to establish this, because hope is not just like, you know, like something that happens, you know, hope has to come out. Like, people have to visually, like at least 100 people see it, they can go, and, you know, it's not always that. So these kind of things. And I don't want to really push a love interest. I can show him bonding with, like, how compassionate he is. I want to show, like, you know, at a point of time, maybe some children got strayed, and they come back, like, you know, he rescues them from these like these savages, or like, you know, these I don't know what to call them, like in Mad Max, what were those people called, like, you know, the you know, those complete, like, you know, the guys, I mean you guys have seen Mad Max, I'm pretty sure. those raiders and all, he saves those children, and how he's compassionate with them. He doesn't use hallucinogens when he's, you know, around children and this and that, because he knows that if they will also ingest it, and they So that will also be a fight sequence where he's to be very clever. He's like, and you see it from his point of view, like, I can't use hallucinogens because, you know, there are children around here. They'll get the shock of that, they'll scar them. So he has to be even more careful, those kind of things. So it's not going to be like a love interest, but his empathy, his love, and how he will, you know, send them back, like that touch will always be there. Because I don't think, I don't want to put too much thing on the Phantom. The more you go with love interest and his thing and this and that, it's going to be a lot more difficult to. And here is a story where I don't want to really push it on the Phantom. I want to push it on what the
influence of the Phantom is on that world and how that is established.
Sure. Cool. No, that's good.
Very different, like, from the Phantom, how I imagine it. But yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I love these post-apocalyptic movies. So it would be really cool to see.
I have a Phantom design in mind. I think I've done this. Like, it was basically Phantom with his hood and everything, but he's wrapped around with, you know, like a big, thick coat because for the sun rays and all. And so I think it'll look good because it gives that little weightiness, and you can see, like, the arms will be still showing, that you can still see his, you know, he's not wearing the full thing, but he has like little gauntlets and like his boots are still there. So it'll be like a Phantom wrapped in, like, you know. So it's like, that is the Mr. Walker, like, overcoat for me in the in a post-apocalyptic universe. That is how Mr. Walker, you know, travels. And he will have, he will have a dog in the middle of the show. He will rescue, like, this, like, dog from a mutant pack of, like, you know, like, other dogs into Biden. And he will show that he's raising that dog. And that dog does come in handy. Like, in the seventh episode or something, when he's trying to, like, when he's getting battered by the main villain, the dog kind of provides that distraction, comes and, like, you know, bites through, and suddenly, and that is how he managed to get away. So that is how we also gave it, like, you know, you're a little devil, you know. He's going to quip something like that when he sees, like, the dog is a real fighter, and something that to make the reference to devil and things like that.
Awesome.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you, Ankit, for your pitch. We'll certainly take that under advisement. We need to get moving, though. And as we spin the wheel, I'm the lucky one who comes out next to give my pitch. So to get into it, like Duncan, I'm pitching this as at a streaming service, ideally a Netflix or somewhere that's got a lot of reach. It's a live action show, and I'm also looking at a 10 episode series. I'm thinking 55 to 60 minute episodes to fit in what I want to get in. I couldn't walk away from, you know, this is a Chronicle Chamber show. I've called this The Chronicles, or just plain Chronicles. And the series is, it's based in the present day, but it's it has extended action or adventure flashback sequences that stretch back through history. And so I don't need a 21st Phantom. I need about 8 different actors to play my Phantoms. Target audience is adventure lovers of all ages. So the overview of this is that it's an action-packed TV series that is very much based on Lee Falk's iconic character, the Phantom, and it draws heavily on the comic book experience, or the comic strip experience of that a lot of us would be big fans of. It weaves together past and present narratives, and it delves into the rich legacy of the Phantom across generations, blending that idea of past and present. Now, it's a two-paced narrative. The present is the narrative that arcs right across all 10 episodes. The past narratives are self-contained and are covered completely within each episode. So the idea I have is to start the series, or episode one. Basically the way that it works is the 21st Phantom is reading in the Chronicle Chamber. He's reading from the Chronicles to a small audience. Sometimes it's his wife and kids. It's the maybe devils in the room, his Bandar friends. In some episodes, maybe he's even just reading quietly to himself. Although from the beginning, the viewer, he doesn't, but the viewer has a constantly growing awareness that there's actual trouble brewing in his time. The 21st only becomes aware of this in later episodes as word filters through to the Skull Cave. Interwoven throughout his storytelling, each episode transports viewers to a thrilling adventure of a previous Phantom, a lot of which I see as being drawn from Lee Falk or Team Phantom and stories. Episode one is going to open with a 2 to 3 minute sequence that shows a violent takeover of the presidential building in Bengala. This episode serves as the introduction. It primarily recounts the tale of a previous generation Phantom, and I'd start with the death of the 14th, and then have the 15th swearing the oath and taking the rings. Then I would have the 15th Phantom succeeding in a simple jungle mission. For instance, Sing pirate raiders attacking the Maori fishing village. And we hear that story in its entirety, while we're also introduced to the Phantom in his cave, and we're also got this other plot line of the takeover of the presidential building. We're led through the the story of the 15th Phantom by the 21st as he shares that with his family. He establishes a connection between past and present. So a lot of the scenic elements from the episode are also going to be seen in the present incarnation. So, for example, because we're seeing, and this will be the only episode I do it, because we see the death of the 14th and the beginning of the 15th, we're going to see elements of the Skull Cave, whether it's the crypt. We certainly see the rings. We see various things that we then catch glimpses of in the 21st Phantom's read. The scenes with the 21st Phantom. This episode would close by revisiting that action sequence from the opening minutes, and it's the only time we go back to that. But in that moment, we have a dying victim calling out for help from the Phantom or leaving a message for the Phantom, and we get the lead into episode two that storyline is going to continue. But meanwhile, the storyline of the 15th Phantom is done. So that sets the stage for what is, I think, a pretty unique format for this TV series, where each episode alternates between the modern day Phantom telling stories from different chronicles, maybe looking for information as we get later in the track from the chronicles, and as I said before, each episode being a standalone adventure from the past. It's a two-speed storyline, as I said, the 21st Phantom reading from the chronicles, relaying that action-packed adventure from the past, but as I said, the viewer knows all along, the Phantom gets a growing awareness that there's a presidential coup being led by the modern Singh crime syndicate with connections to some of those stories from the past, but not all, and that's unfolding in his time. And the standalone episodes about past Phantoms, and I'd bounce around from the 2nd, the 14th, the 18th, the 12th, whatever. They're all, as I say, self-contained. I'd be going back to some of the really popular popular because I like them, stories from the past Phantoms, things like the 12 Tasks, issues like the 9th Phantom and the Flame story, those sorts of things could make really effective standalone episodes. In terms of the breakdown of that, I'd spend no more than 10 to 12 minutes of each episode for those first 8 episodes in the series, set in the present, and 48 to 50 minutes of each of them is focused on the past adventure. So while those initial episodes feature Phantoms from various time periods, what we're really doing is building tension and viewer anticipation for when is this 21st Phantom, who we're seeing a lot of, when is he actually going to go and embark on his own adventure? Those past adventures may not be necessarily directly linked to what's going on with the Singh crime syndicate in the present day, but they certainly offer clues and foreshadowings that reward some of the more astute viewers as they piece them together. Things like the Singh pirates, the 15th Phantom is heavily involved in becoming the unknown commander of the Jungle Patrol, so we can have elements of the Jungle Patrol. Stories that show past Phantoms, the origins of past Phantoms, and certainly examples of how old jungle sayings may have been instigated or drawn upon in some of those past Phantom adventures, but then we need them again in episodes 9 and 10. And so episodes 9 and 10 are going to be when the current Phantom springs into life, and those two episodes are focused on him addressing the situation that's going on with the Singh and the presidential coup. So throughout the series then, what we've seen is that viewers will witness the growth and the development of the Phantom legend and really get an understanding and appreciation for this being a legacy and a generational hero, which I think is going to be, for me, the key standout difference to, you know, what's almost an oversaturation at the moment of superhero movies and stories and sequences. We're dipping into the past and we're seeing this grow with a family. And because each of those Phantoms contributes to the growing of the mythology of the character. Visual cues between the past and present Phantom, past and present storylines, like, as I said, the Skull Cave, the Phantom's Rings, they're going to establish that generational connection and reinforce that notion of a lineage that spans centuries rather than just being, a simple one-shot person set in the present. So the way I see the season finale coming is that the first season culminates in a double episode with episode 9 and 10, where the 21st Phantom finally responds to the drama that's been building through the previous episodes. That gripping storyline is going to be the culmination of all of the earlier foreshadowing that's happened, both in the little snippets we've seen through episodes 1 through 8 and also some of the stuff that's been happening in the past Phantom adventures. At the end of episode 10, because I've had the Phantom, the 21st Phantom, reading to his family at different times, we know, and because we've seen that generational thing, we know that Kit or Heloise are there and ready to step up. Like, I've got them at an age where they could become the next Phantom. So it's actually quite believable and in some ways likely that the 21st Phantom is going to perish at the end of episode 10. However, I'm not going to show that in its, you know, because I am coming back for season two and I want to be able to use episode one of season two to either reveal the 21st Phantom has died and the 22nd Phantom needs to step up, or 21st Phantom has survived. So that's certainly where I see the series progressing. The narrative can explore that dynamic relationship between the 21st Phantom and his children, and who we know are gradually being prepared to take up the mantle in case of his demise. And that, I would hope, adds an extra layer of suspense. It certainly is conceivable that the 21st Phantom does die at the end of episode 10, and ensures the potential for future storylines and character development. So basically, I see Chronicles as being an exciting and visually stunning TV series that combines thrilling adventures from the past with a compelling present-day storyline. It's really important to me that pay homage to Lee Falk's original work while introducing some new narratives as well. I would hope that viewers can prepare to embark on a journey that spans generations where the legend of the Phantom lives on. I don't have any actors in mind, mostly because I focus on the Phantom and not the rest of pop culture, but I'm certainly happy to give over to a casting director. One of the key things for me about the presentation of the Phantom would be, as I sort of said at the beginning, I need probably a different Phantom for each of the first eight episodes while we bounce around the 15th, the 2nd, the 3rd, whatever it might be, Phantoms. And I really want to capture the international flavour of the Phantom, because one of the things that I think can really be harnessed is that idea that the Phantom has married wives from all over the world at different times. The Phantom's got Mongolian blood in him. The Phantom's got Indian blood in him. The Phantom has got American blood in him. The 21st Phantom needs to be an actor who's got a real international feel. And rightly or wrongly for me, I think that's maybe a Polynesian actor, has that sort of a sense of being someone that captures that whole of the international feel. But anyway, that's where I'm going for casting. I am going to need a Diana and some Kit and a Heloise Garan. In terms of Bandar, I don't know what's possible in terms of AI, whether we can capture, regular-sized humans and use AI to shrink them to two-thirds of human size so that we still have that sense of pygmy without hopefully being too insensitive about it.
I've got a question straight up. You've got the 21st Phantom. You're the only one so far that's pitched the 21st Phantom. Surely you're going to go Billy Zane for the 21st Phantom, right?
Well, maybe Billy Zane could be the 20th Phantom. Maybe we could have a flashback there. Perhaps Billy Zane could narrate a little bit of it, similar to what Ash is planning to do with the Art of Play games. But unfortunately, probably too much time has passed to still have Billy as the 21st.
These flashback episodes, do you think them like it fades and you just see like what happens in 1673 or whatever, or will it be like in A Princess Bride where people are like interrupting and asking questions, or how do you see them?
The idea of that Princess Bride analogy. However, I wouldn't go over the top with it. As I said, I only want to have maybe 10 minutes at most, 10 to 12 minutes at most in each episode of the present day stuff. And that's got to include the unfolding of this external plot. But that could be a really cool device in terms of bringing us back. I'd certainly think, the streaming episode's not going to have ads, I wouldn't have thought. But if it was picked up by a regular TV show that had ads, you would go to the ads in the time of the 16th Phantom and come back still in the time of the 16th Phantom. You don't need to be coming back to the Skull Cave all the time.
Is this a kissing Phantom TV show?
A kissing?
That's a Princess Bride quote from again.
Oh, right. Sorry. Well, I asked things before about love interests. I see this Phantom as having quite a lot of different love interests. probably is going to be a kissing Phantom at times, yes.
I'm just curious about your vision, Dan, for handling the traditional setting of the Phantom in the Skull Cave with the Bandar. If it's set now, is he in Africa now and he's got
How are you managing the balance with the
white savior bit,
the banda?
No, as very much they're equals, they're friends, and much the same when the Phantom, if we were to go ahead with the Sing Pirates raiding the Maori village, the Phantom needs to turn up and he's their great friend. He's not their saviour, but he's someone that they know that they can depend on to come along and help. In any of the adventures, the tribal people would be every bit as successful in, booting out the pirates than the Phantom is. He just happens to turn up and be able to take out the big bad, if you like. It's a tricky balance, and in 2023, one a very fine line to walk. I understand that, but very much on the friendly, equal footing as much as possible. He just happens to live there. The first Phantom very much depended on the help of and the second and the third, as they established their home in the jungle, would be very much relying on the friendship and the generosity and the support of the local people. And he lives his life, and his families live their lives in a constant effort to pay that back.
And episode 7, you said, was his. Sorry.
Well, either his or Steggy, one or the other, yeah.
Yeah. So I had a question, the deal is, in this series, it's like a newspaper strip adaptation, more so, is the way it's been approached.
Yes.
So the biggest... I feel one of the biggest difficulties of live action from newspaper adaptations or any strip adaptations is that when a person reads a strip, or anybody who's reading a strip, they're already aware of the fact that there is this disbelief of reality. But when people are watching TV shows now, they want it to be either you make it something like Sandman or something. So it's very difficult. So it's basically going to be a period piece in a way. Most of it is going to be a period piece in a way. Yeah. So my biggest question in this is balancing that look, that visual look, and having that consistency that this is the same show when you're moving, switching from period piece to piece. And now with budgets being very it's not easy. But CGI has taken over. So practical effects, budgets and all of this, it's a little difficult to put a ship of that old scale and then shooting in different locales and this and that, those things. So taking all of that together, a producer, when they will take a pitch, will always want you to what can you modify to make it easier for me to, actually put this thing. So if you get your pitch is accepted, but we want some modifications so that makes it practical for us to, shoot this in this story way. So what would you do? What stories would you take, which would not involve elaborate castles or something like that, where the locations are very difficult, especially the Fox stories, you mentioned, it's very, very difficult at times to make it authentic to that source simply because of the setting and everything that is there. So yeah, that.
Look, I think that some of the best Lee Fork stories are the simplest and are set in and around Bengala or the jungle. And I don't think, for me, I wouldn't shirk away from the fact that this is set in the jungle and it's set in Africa and it's set in the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s. Embrace that and have a consistency of theme there. The wharf rats might be a really good, you could give that the wharf rat story or the swamp, the swamp people or the swamp?
Swamp rats.
The wharf rats as well? The Swamp Dragon, that was a Steggy story, wasn't it?
No, I wouldn't actually bring Steggy. Probably maybe season 6 or 7 when we're starting to really grasp. But
I could have a dedication to Nick.
We jumped the dinosaur.
That's right. Look, I think if you've got a couple of Ocean episodes, you can film them both at the same time, whether they're episode 3 and 7 or whatever it is, so that you've got the pirate on the Phantom on the high seas. I really like the simple stories though, like the 12 tasks where he's That's the one with his where he's with the rope people and has to do all the things that his grandfather did to prove that he's the same man. That sort of thing would really speak to the generational idea of my particular Phantom and would be really cost-effective in terms of budget and set to do, I would have thought.
Cool.
Also, I'm backed by Renee White, who's got very deep pockets.
But I always thought, like, how, like, what kind of, like, rating are you going to give this? Like, will there be deaths shown or something like that?
No, I would very much pitch this as a PG TV show, certainly suitable for your 12-year-olds to watch. I'm unashamedly harnessing a lot of what I love about the Phantom and how I grew up with the Phantom, reading comics and having that 12 to 14, 15-year-old experience.
My pitch also is like what I like with the Phantom, and I like matinee and like the Indiana Jones style and Jungle Cruise, the new one. Yeah, so my pitch is set in the 1930s, and we start off with seeing Billy Zane donning the suit, and he and this, like, we start off not telling anything about the legacy or the oath or anything like that. What we see is like the bad guys are being afraid of this ghost who walks, man who cannot die. And the Phantom has this friend, and they are like beating up bad guys and getting information about where there is a big pirate, all that, like Sing Pirates. Yeah, like this is like the first two episodes or one or two episodes, and they go there and fight, take down this nest of pirates, and it's still like, yeah, happy about it. It's not grim or dark or anything, but like in the end of the first or second episode, depending on how long it is, his friend that we really feel that they are trusting each other. He gets stabbed in the back, like in the belt. We see the Phantom dies, like the main character dies, and then we see him taking like the belt and pushing him in the water. So we believe that, like, oh well, he might survive, he might not, if you're not familiar with the Phantom. And then next episode, we start off with like 1536. We get the story about the origin of the Phantom, how he helps the Vandar, or basically they use him to set themselves free from this other tribe that takes advantage of them. About the suit, about the mark of the skull. And then we see that this is like a young Phantom learning this from his father. And then we go to still like the 30s, but a young Phantom living in America, and maybe not even sound. We just see someone coming to take him home back to the skull cave, and he's have to leave his life that he's building up. And yeah, real classic Phantom stories. And yeah, then we see him like almost like a montage but maybe like two or three taking down small thugs or crooks in New York or somewhere, and with flashbacks of when he was learned the skills of shooting and trapping and hunting and tracking. Yeah. All of those learned from his father, and from that we then see he get this like information about that around the underworld people are talking about this thug who killed the Phantom, and then like the rest of the season will be his trying to figure out how and getting a way in to infiltrate this stronghold where the new leader of the pirates are. So he needs to get there and, yeah, taking down the Phantom. You mix the belt and Sing Brotherhood in the end of the season. And then, yeah, that's basically it. It's very high level compared to each the others. And, yeah, like I said, Billy Zane would be the 20th Phantom. I'm not sure about the 21st, but yeah, I chose this Josh Hutcherson from Hunger Games, who played Peeta. He's getting lots of muscles, and I think he could look the part. And then I would like to see, like in the flashback of the first Phantom, would be like Henry Cavill, I think he looked great as a superhero. And then, that would be my Diana, Victoria Pedretti. And Guran would be Shamik Moore, because Guran should also be the same age as the Phantom. And yeah, I mean, they're best friends and work together, like with the 21st Phantom.
So we need to go to questions first. So questions, folks.
I guess my question is, would today's generation like the 1930s theme? Is that too old? Will like today's teenagers, 20-year-olds be able to relate to a show set in the 30s?
I mean, I do like it, but I'm not 20 and 30 anymore. But I mean, Jungle Cruise went well, right? And I mean, it's not overexploded right now like many other themes are. So
yeah, I certainly think that. I mean, you look at Indiana Jones, that starts in the 30s and drifts from there. It's still very popular now. And Captain America, World War II origin story as well. So it's certainly not, it wouldn't be the only thing that's out there. And those other things are popular. So
yeah, Wonder Woman also, right?
Hmm. So my question, Mikkel, do you see this as, so basically you're sort of saying that by episode 3 we're getting into, following the Phantom that is going to be the main character of the series. Is he having a series of one-off adventures, or do you see that being one long adventure that's connected through?
I see it starting off with like one-off adventures while getting puzzling together what happened with his father, basically, because he's, and in the beginning he will also like have to, even though he has all these skills, he doesn't have like the experience, so he will still do a lot of mistakes and such. So that it works well, I think, with like one of things, but it ties together in the long run.
Yep, cool.
I like the how you're using some of those the really classic origin stories like the belt and some of the elements from those stories, Mikkel. Is there a particular villain or that you want the Phantom to be being matched against, to that he's really being challenged by from back in that period?
Yeah, I mean, Rama Singh would be the main villain of the whole season one, because like he and the 20th Phantom is friends, and then he basically becomes the leader of the Sings. Yeah, so he's like the main bad guy, but he will not be on screen on every episode.
So my question is based on the fact that I like how you called the belt and Rama Singh, you're keeping that intact. So, but when I think of it, the stories of how the new Phantom starts to get into and finds, avenges his father's, killer. That's basically the run through of the episode. So it reminds me of basically Phantomen's very own, year one storyline. And it actually had really great stuff, because it put Phantom, in the US, how he handled, when he was still not wearing the costume, showing that he was trained. So there was actually one story which I really liked, and I think it's called The Hurricane or something. It was, I think, second last or some story in the year one. And it was a fantastic story, yeah. So, and that was a very good standalone story also, in a way. It just put you in a situation. It was not just a Phantom, it was a situational story. So I'm saying, so those kind of stories really, I would say, appeal cross-generation. It doesn't have young, even a young person would really like the intrigue that story brought. So are you looking to make, actually be taking stuff from the Phantomen universe more so? Because I think everybody talks about the classic story newspapers so that people can find it more relatable. But since you are Swedish and Phantomen has actually done so much for actually keeping the Phantom still in print, what more of Phantomen would you put into your pitch to, give it that distinct flavor that there is also the universe of Phantomen being represented?
Yeah, I mean, what I really enjoy with the Team Phantom story is when they flesh out what's already there by Lee Falk. But yeah, I really love, I think it's called Part of the Hurricane or something, Eye of the Hurricane. But yeah, I really enjoyed that story also. But It's very Agatha Christie like. But the main focus would be this arc from first seeing the 20th Phantom, and in the end, like when the 21st defeats Rama, takes on his father's belt, get his rings back. That would be like, you feel like, well, now, and then you can start with season two when he already has that and like build on top of that. Yeah, I'm not sure that was the answer to your question.
Very good. All right, we need to keep moving. Germ, your pitch, mate, you got to round us out.
There's a bit of a theme going on where basically we're not using the 21st Phantom, and I think that's a smart move because it gives the writers room to explore the Phantom's world as kind of like as a fresh canvas. A new Phantom does that where the 21st Phantom kind of limits people because you're always comparing it to the comic. I would like the next Phantom to be in his late teens or early 20s and either at school or in the early stage in training somewhere like the army, police, etc. I want him young enough because the Phantom always becomes the Phantom, you know, 18 to 21. So he wants to be there. So he probably can't be in like the FBI then, but he can be in the army or police or something like that. Now, I don't want the Phantom to be weak or to be pathetic. He needs to be great at what he does. But if he has to have a weakness, it would have to be that he maybe lacks some self-confidence or he's a very humble person. So he's not, I don't want a cocky jock, you know, or someone who's comes across arrogant. I want someone who comes across likable, whether it's to the jocks, but also to the nerds, and you know, a real type of person that everyone likes. Now, the story needs to be central on the past Phantom dying in an epic opening episode. So first episode, you know, the big action, non-stop action, you know, the big epic type of one where I want action. He gets shot and it closes with Kit getting the dreaded call that his dad has died. So that's the first episode. The second episode is swearing the oath along with... And then in the second episode, as he's swearing the oath, we also get the flashback of the origin story. So like a lot of other people, I want flashbacks. I think flashbacks is a great way of establishing and telling of the origin, but also establishing the lore for the new fans, which I believe will be majority of the viewers, will probably be new fans or fans that have a little bit of an understanding. And with the flashbacks, it helps give teaching those fans. So every episode will have flashbacks. The first season is kind of like a year one saga. And then the flashbacks is of the first Phantom with his year one as well. So we get the year one of the first Phantom, the year one of the current Phantom as well. I wouldn't even worry about giving it a number like a 21st, 22nd or whatever. I don't think it needs that. You just know that there is a legacy and all those flashbacks help give that. So the storyline will be based on an overarching storyline. So it could be revenge on the killer of the dad or the Benguela presidency being overthrown, or maybe even the Skull Cave being ransacked as well. So you've got your major story, and as he goes through, like for instance, he might get beaten. So then then he remembers a story about the first Phantom being beaten in one of his first battles, and so he's learning about the first Phantom, and then there's similarities and stuff like that as well. Now, I do, with my actors, I've got a couple of different ones. So I want mid to 20-year-old actors and relatively unknown, so that way they can kind of grow in the role. So this one is Cody Christian. I want a fit, athletic man. I don't want boys. This guy is an Aussie, so we know he's going to be good. This one is Jacob Eldori. So someone who would look good, dressed up like in a suit, but has that, you know, 5 o'clock shadow, has the scruffy type of hair, looks rugged, but could pull off his inner James Bond as well. So, and then there was another one, you know, that's Michael Hoog. He's actually a well-known skier or something. So, you know, he's got that athletic look. He's got the strong features. Someone that you know you can look at it and go, okay, he could pull it off. I don't want a dweeb. I don't want a little boy. Now, when it comes to a female, I don't want a Miss Universe fake-looking leading lady who would be afraid of getting their fingernails broken. She needs to be attractive, but she needs to have that, you know, that kick-ass style, tough, not a damsel in distress, someone who can hold their own, maybe who's also in the training in the army or in the police as well. So that way, you got to cater for the female audience as well. You don't want just the male dominating it and she's your love interest who gets kidnapped in every second episode. So a couple of ideas. This one's a Hallie Steinfeld, someone that, you know, that again, attractive, but you know, you could hold her own. And then I've got another example, you know, a Zoe Deutsch, you know, someone. Now with a bander, I like the idea of a couple of people made mention of an older, grizzled, grumpy old type of guy that is going to be able to offer guidance. But then I also want not a slapstick comedy relief sidekick, but I want someone who's maybe a little bit more tech, but not just the person in the van, someone who's going to be able to, you know, actually be able to fight alongside it. Because like what we made mention with your pitch, Dan, there needs to be that balance. It can't just be the white savior type of thing. So, you know, there's that delicate line that we have to follow. And I don't want the Guran, in a sense, to be someone who's stuck in the van. I want him to be an equal, someone who's equally fighting, someone who's rugged, who's got a bit of an attitude, a look about him, and someone who could hold his own, who's been risen in the jungle. So, you know, when I was Googling African actors, I looked at him and I thought, yeah, he could be a fighter. So this is a Terrell Jackson, who's someone who kind of took my fancy of someone who could do that. The room for growth is the first season will focus on the Phantom, but have Easter eggs of people who could be for the next series. So I like the idea of having Flash, Lothar, and Mandrake, but the first season is kind of like an establishment of the KFS world. So you've got the Phantom is, you know, the most popular of those four characters. So you have the Phantom, and then you kind of have the little dribs and the drabs bump into someone who helps him, and he could be Lothar, or it could be Mandrake, or, you know, it could be like, oh, get, you know, hang on, let me call my friend Mandrake, or it's just something. So it kind of teases it to a point and gives it an ability to be able to create an establishment. Now, a season that I think did it well with the flashbacks, but also with the creation of the universe, would be Arrow. So similar as that, where you're having bad guys that might appear for an episode or two, but then maybe come back for season two or season three. And the same as with Flash and Mandrake. And Arrow did it well with Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and some other, and a good arrangement of bad guys. So you have each episode's kind of like a standalone adventure, but it's got that overarching story to the end goal. So yeah, so that's kind of like my pitch. Any questions?
Yeah, I'll go, Jim. You said that he's training to be a police officer or in the army or whatever. And with the actors that you've shown us, I think you're probably pitching more at that 21, 22 age than the late teen. But like, where do you see that taking place? Is this set in Bengala, or is he in New York?
Look, we've got lots of money. So we're basically going international. So, you know, yes, there'll be a lot of America, because let's face it, Americans think that there isn't anywhere else apart from America. So that will help kind of like a, you know, when you a relation, like they'll relate, because they'll see New York, they'll see, you know, Chicago, they'll see Los Angeles. But if you are going international, yes, Africa has to be there. But I would also like to see the fans and travel, you know, maybe an adventure in Sweden, maybe an adventure in Australia, in India, and stuff like that, to be able to pay homage to where probably majority of the viewers will be.
Sounds like you're being backed by Renee White as well. Any other questions?
Yeah, my question is, what kind of like runtime are you looking at per episode? Very honestly,
It will probably be the 40 to 50 minute ones, like what we kind of see, you know, 40 minutes to an hour, you know, maybe for the the first one, it might be an hour for this, you know, the ends, it might be, you know, the double episode or longer as well. But yeah, probably around those time, I think 30 minutes is too short. I think, you know, it's not going to go to the point of, say, like Game of Thrones, where it's a standalone movie each episode. That becomes, you know, a bit too much. But your 40 minutes, it kind of gives you enough to flesh out a character, flesh out the story, but it doesn't, you know, let's face it, we do live in the microwave generation. I want it to be punchy enough for the younger generation, for the 20-year-olds, like that age demographic, which is why I've kind of chosen actors in that age demographic and not gone for an established Phantom, but gone for a new Phantom. So then that way, hopefully the viewers can actually grow up with the Phantom in a sense.
I see you've got you cast some females, but I noted you weren't holding yourself to it being the 21st, but that's the love interest for whoever Kit is. Where do you see it? And you mentioned that she wants to be a strong character that's potentially doing training. They're meeting their training or whatever. Where do you see, and I'm putting you on the spot, but where would you see their relationships at? Is that already an established connection that they've got? Is he chasing her? Is she chasing him? Like we had a very traditional and old-fashioned in the newspaper strip with him having to woo her for 40 years before they got a date.
It'll be one hell of a series if it goes for 40 years. There'll be that on and off where, so when they first meet, there'll be that little bit of flirting, but, you know, the non-interest, because Kit's like, you know, I'm here to train. I'm training to be the Phantom. Like, I don't want him to be someone who's a jock. You know, I want him to be, you know, like a man who's grown up. This is my role. This is what I'm doing. I am now here training to be able to further my education to become a better Phantom. Like, oh, wow, she's cute. Oh, wow, you know, she likes me, I like her. But my sole focus is this. And so I guess every good long-going TV show, whether it's, you know, has that on and off, that banter, the, you know, that on and off love interest, kind of like what the Phantom, the 21st Phantom and Diana had in the first couple of years as well of the newspaper strip, where sometimes they'll miss each other. You know, she might be graduating the army, he's dropped out, and then there might be an adventure where she goes, that move reminds me of Kit. Surely that can't be Kit. He's off doing his fandom business. And so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, that ship moving past the night type of thing where there's something there, but sometimes it doesn't quite happen. Like a good episode, a good TV show, Castle and Bones, where you know they're going to end up, but they somehow miss each other and it's not quite the time. And so there's that tension of that love interest as well. So then that way, for all the wives that are stuck with their husbands watching it, they've got something too that will amuse them. Sorry, Ankit, but I think romance is important.
And that Castle and Beckett was what I was thinking of when I asked that question. So good answer.
Yeah. Where, and you know, in Castle and Beckett, where Beckett is someone who, you know, I don't want this to be the case, but she's strong. She actually rescues Castle a lot of the time. You know, I want someone like her,
yeah,
who's, you know, who's not the damsel in distress. I don't want this to be every second episode Diana's being kidnapped by, you know, the local tribesperson or some dictator.
Look, I just want to say something for the record. I don't know why you think I'm against romance or something, but I'm just saying, like, you know, for my show, that would be, you know, going into a little murky territory or something. You know, it'll just be too long. I just want my show to be like one season so that, you know, people will keep thinking, oh, wow, that was such a great show. I don't want them to have two, three, any seasons. That's it. One season over.
Yeah, no, it was just a cheap dig at you, my friend.
I'm glad you didn't mention about, you know, whether the chain of patients will still be there in that skull throne.
Well, maybe we could have that might have to be a flashback for one of the later episodes, because I want, like what Mikkel talked about with the year one saga, this is the year one type of thing where we can grow with the Phantom. And then to help create and to be able to educate the new fans, I want year one of just the first Phantom as well. So there won't be a chain of patients in this one.
So my question.
Yes.
With these flashbacks, will you use different costumes, different actors, or will it look like the same man?
It will be a different actor, and you know, I would almost go a different like tone to the flashbacks as well. Whether you go, it doesn't have to be, but like something like a black and white or a darker or a sepia or a noir type of feel, you know, with the little grainy little flecks or something like that. Just so then that way the Phantom's going to have, the Phantom current readership is quite old. So you want to signpost it for the older readers or the older fans so they know that it's a flashback, and it kind of gives you that real nostalgic black and white, you know, type of feel. Like they did that even if Arrow had a different different tone to the way it was recorded or so something like that. I don't know what the technical term is, but something like that which establishes that it is. And look, I would love to have Billy Zane, whether he's doing the because I think Billy Zane's got a great voice. I reckon his voice could do it. And I think you have to have Billy Zane in there somehow, whether he does the narration or, you know, like every recap. You know how there's always, you know, a recap. It could be for those who have come in late, and then he could talk about what happened last episode or something like that. But you got to get Billy Zane in there somehow.
Well, I think your little audition just then proves that we should get Billy Zane in and not you doing the For Who.
Yeah.
All right, so those are the five pitches that we have got for you, the listener. Just to recap them, because we do genuinely want, we're putting ourselves on the line here a little bit and asking for the internet to respond. So good luck, gentlemen. So just to recap, Duncan's idea was basically a Defenders relaunch, if you like, with the new Phantom, the 24th Phantom encountering and forming the Defenders team as they battle against Ming. You didn't say the word merciless, but she clearly becomes merciless or has that feel to her. So that's Duncan's idea. Ankit's idea is also, I gather, a bit of a future Phantom set in a post-apocalyptic world where the idea is we're not living in the Phantom's pocket. We're seeing the Phantom through the eyes of others quite a bit, and it becomes a standalone season.
And no love interest.
But he does get a dog.
Man's best friend.
my idea around the two stories, which shows a lot of past Phantoms Phantoms in standalone episodes, while they contribute to a bigger picture story across the 10 episodes for the current Phantom. I think I, after all of that, you're right, Jim, I am the only one who's got the 21st Phantom in it, because maybe Mikkel, with Mikkel's idea about being set in the 1930s and a new Phantom, you know, learning how to become the Phantom and then gradually avenging the death of his father, and incorporating some of the ideas from the childhood of the Phantom I heard there too, Mikkel. And Germ's idea about, yeah, very much a year one saga, but with flashbacks to the first year of the Phantom, the first year of the first Phantom as well. So we have those flashbacks back and forward and connecting those two. So those are the five pitches. Have I explained those, gentlemen? Is there anything you'd like to expand on for your idea, just in a sentence or two for the elevator pitch?
No, sounds good.
Cool. So those are the five. Guys, if you're guys and girls who are listening, we'd love you to contribute. I know that we'll throw this on Facebook, the link to this on Facebook. Feel free to comment in the comment section there, on Twitter, wherever you get your Phantom Chronicle Chamber news from. Jump on board and let us know which of those five you think might work, or if you've got your own ideas, please throw those in the notes as well. But, guys, Jerm alluded to this at the start about asking some generic questions, and we've all had a chance to sit down and think about how we would pitch a Phantom TV show, and we've also heard the ideas from others. Where do you, well, let's ask some general questions about this. The first one is, does it need to be the 21st Phantom? I mean, Jerm's alluded to that already, but does it need to be a 21st Phantom, or would it actually be easier if the 21st Phantom is not in it?
Well, I think it would be easier not having the 21st Phantom in it. I'll be interested in hearing Dan, yours, and Mikel, because you've had the 21st Phantom. And as I said in my pitch, I think it allows the writers to be able to create their own Phantom without having to look, let's face it, we, as in the five of us, and I think a lot of the listeners who are listening to this, will know the 21st Phantom more than the writer. And so it allows the writer a little bit more freedom and not to be tied to history or to our current Phantom. So that's why I think it's actually a good idea not having the 21st Phantom.
Oh, I had the 21st Phantom because that's the one that I know and love, and that's, and while you're right, it probably makes it easier for a new show to stuff it up if you use the 21st Phantom. It probably does. But there's also just such a wealth of source material there that if you, as a writer, can be humble enough to go, you know what, there's some gold here, I'm going to mine that, and I'm going to use what's there, maybe, you know, yeah, I think that... It's worth using the 21st. Why would you try and reinvent the wheel?
Could you still mine the gold for a future Phantom and not just the 21st? Or like,
cause... yeah, well, of course. In my idea, I've got eight. You know, across 10 episodes, probably 8 different Phantoms, including, well, all past Phantoms, no future. But again, I would probably base those off favorite Phantom stories. Of, that's where I'm going.
Mikel, asking you the same question. Why? Because you've got the 21st Phantom. Why is that important for you?
To me, the Phantom basically is the 21st Phantom. I've been like fighting for him to pass on the mantle, but for as you say, most viewers will not be well. I mean, they might know, oh, Phantom with the wolf and the skull ring and such. So I think that's the good starting point to move it further ahead when most of the viewers probably don't have any knowledge of the Phantom lore, is to not take advantage of all the lore that's already there.
Yeah.
Like, you want to see Devil, you want to see all of that.
Mm.
For those who know a little bit, and those who don't know anything, well, then you don't have to change it. So yeah, I don't see a reason, unless you really want to do something really, really different. But then I feel maybe you shouldn't do Phantom at all. Maybe you should do another story in that case.
Yeah. Duncan, anything you just want to add to that and to that discussion? I mean, you didn't have the 21st Phantom. Anything you just want to know?
I'd like to say one thing, though, why I don't want to use the 21st. Why? See, 21st for me, the biggest problem is I always look in perspective that fans are very passionate about 21st, because that's the Phantom we all read up growing and everything. And in practical terms, the whole thing I see is it's so established, it's so known that you are in a very tight position of, you know, really exploring, because you have to start thinking, when you go, you want to be faithful. How faithful are you going to be? Because it's always that little problem, situation that arises, that where do you get with creative liberties? That's why when I first thought initially, like I did my pitch, I also thought about, you know, the 21st and everything, because I was thinking of how, you know, Batman Begins was, you know, rebooted. They did not really change anything. They made it a more grounded character. But then I thought, you know, Batman works because there is always, it's a very contemporary, although it was a 1930s thing, you know, it was a period per se, but it always works. It can be contemporary, but because the problem is Phantom is, it can also be contemporary, but because it's so fixed, like 21st, 26th and 13th, because the lore has been written in such a manner and it's inherited, it cannot be that one person. Like, you know, you cannot start the first Phantom in the, like, it just doesn't mentally, like, it's very difficult to get that. Like, the first Phantom, like, that, I thought that would be the riskiest move. So that is the biggest problem I have, that, you know, putting 21st is
that, you know, you have to then again be faithful about hero. You have to be faithful about devil. All that situation arises, and it just makes like the writer and all the situation. I'll get a lot more cramped up in terms of just telling
less
the story.
Less room to move.
So that's why 21st was, I think, something I didn't really want to explore at all after initially thinking about it.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, one of the things that I hadn't thought about at all when I was thinking about how to pitch this is the idea of a Defenders of the Earth reboot or relaunch or anything like that. I think we would all agree, having heard Duncan's pitch, though, that there's certainly room to explore that idea. I'll save you to last, Duncan, if you like. But everyone else, where did you consider a Defenders sort of an idea, or do you think it could work? Certainly, the way that that Duncan's proposed it.
It sounds great, and it ties up nicely. I think it would really work. But yeah, it didn't occur to me either. But it was more like, to me, it feels like a different IP, almost like your main said, that you can start off with one character and then adding another and so on, like they have done with many other superhero franchises lately.
Very honestly, when I was hearing Duncan's pitch, I was like, wow, I was thinking, oh God, like, what am I going to say after that? Because I was just like, the narrative, like, it was very visually striking and it just made sense. It was like how when I first read I don't know if you've read the DC Dan Jurgens reboot of Flash Gordon. But I have, and it's really good. Like, it just took the best parts of Alex Raymond's story and it just did something like, you knew that is not the Flash Gordon you read, but it just put everything. And then you think, it's also very good in terms of an audience point of view, because right now, if you look at the films that are coming out, from the DC and the Marvel verse, they are not just talking about like standalone characters anymore. They are putting that little bit of thing, and not just even standalone characters, they're talking about multiverses. They're literally the same character. Like, people are now so comfortable of having different realities and actually want representations of that, which was unthinkable. I would always again say, like, Batman Begins was like the starting point for this. So, when you're talking about like Defenders of the Earth, like, and at that point of time, I was saying, wow, why didn't I think of this at all? But then I realized why, because the pitch was in my head, like, that this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, a great writer, like, they always, they look beyond just what the topic is. In my head, when I had this topic run sheet, I just saw, a phantom. So I had the tunnel vision. I didn't even consider all of it. And while he was doing his pitch, I was desperately in my head trying to make up in my pitch if I could, somehow, insert them and, come across a little bit more clever than what I could do, because I was just like, oh my God, this is actually such a great pitch. That's it. But it didn't happen. So, yeah.
What about you, Jen? Did you consider Defenders at all?
Well, I did make mention of having Easter eggs towards scattered throughout the first season. But I think for me, I think if you go straight into it, well, I wouldn't go straight into it, although I think Duncan's would work well. And I do like the idea of expanding the King Features universe. Yeah, I would start off with the Phantom and then have Flash, Lothar and Mandrake kind of scattered throughout it, and then introduce them more in the second or third season.
Cool. Duncan, did you toss up regular fandom stories before you came to your Defenders idea, or what was your process there?
I did. The reason I was going to do an animated one originally, and it was going to be solely based on the Phantom and go through the generational thing. But it was the animated thing I looked at was sort of a, if you've ever read the Wilbur Smith, Courtney's at Sea, the Courtney family, like Birds of Prey and Monsoon, that kind of legacy story of a family at sea fighting pirates, but told through animation, directed at adults, but safe for kids to watch. And but the Defenders thing, I liked the idea of playing with, but I made sure that it's centered on the Phantom. So the Phantom is holding them all together. Yeah. So Flash might go off and go on this space fleet mission, but
we stay with the Phantom, but we've got other people that we can play with and look at and be entertained by and be drawn to and have multiple storylines going on through the series.
Yeah, sure. Oh, very good. Now, Germ has brought up Billy Zane a number of times. Who thinks it's important that Billy Zane is involved?
Yeah, mate. The reason why I do it is it's corny. It is corny. I completely understand. But a lot of fans didn't really like the 96 movie. But Billy Zane, whether you like the movie or not, he is the Phantom when it comes to TV movie. He is the Phantom. And so it's just a little nod. Like for instance, on the Flash TV show, they had the old school Flash from
John Wesley's ship.
Yeah, there you go. And they actually had him as one of the alternative Flashes. And social media went bonkers because it's like, oh, that's my Flash, that's my Flash, that's my Flash. And so I just think, however you get it in there, I just think it could have that same total and nostalgic type of feel, and it could expand the universe. So that's why I think it's important.
For mine, I don't think you do need Billy Zane. I think it would be a cool little Easter egg, if you like, but to have him in as that capture the social media moment, for sure. I can understand how that would be really popular, but I don't think he needs an ongoing involvement. And as I sort of suggested when I did my pitch, I think, unfortunately for Billy, the moment's kind of passed. I did actually ponder having him in a bit of a Patrick McGowan type role, not as a ghost, because I hated that element of the Phantom's dad in the 1996 movie, but whether he could think back to sitting at his dad's feet, hearing about how to be a Phantom, or flashback to Billy Zane training him a little bit in how to be a Phantom, that sort of thing might be a possibility. But realistically, I think, unfortunately, too much time has passed. We're coming up to 30 years, believe it or not, since the Phantom movie came out. And, yeah, I just think that, unfortunately, that ship might have sailed beyond a cameo-type social media appearance.
Very honestly about Billy, like, you know, although that movie came out when I was a kid and I saw it, I liked it. I mean, I liked his performance and all of it. But putting him in the series, I could, like, the kind of way my pitch has been done, you can easily put him there just as a sort of a thing, like fan service, like folks. But I won't really put him as a Phantom or something like that. Like, he could just easily be one of those villagers, like, you know, just like a little cameo role and all of that. You know, just like a walk-in role or something. That's about it. But I wouldn't really use, because he's too old now, and it would be very, I don't know, I feel it would be more disservice to him if we just perfunctorily put him in some sort of a role like a wise old man or like a force ghost, you know, coming back and advising him. So that.
I think in these days of we're selling nostalgia when we're rebooting or reimagining these past characters, this past IP. And when you look at those examples you gave, like the Flash TV show, Flash and Arrow TV show, and the recent Flash movie where everyone over 30 who went to that movie went to see Michael Keaton in a rubber bat suit and to hear that Hans Zimmer music again, you have to have Billy Zane. If it's the voiceover, like someone had suggested for those who came in late, or if he's the 20th Phantom in a flashback, or he's playing the Phantom's ancestor or whatever, you just have to do it, because for a lot of people, probably about for a 10-year gap in history, he is their Phantom. And so they're going to come looking for him in that show, and you have to give it to them. That stunt casting is done so commonly now, but it can be done really well.
I had him in my pitch, and even if he wouldn't have that big of a role, I would like to see him like one Phantom passing the mantle to another one. And but I mean, it's not a must have, it's just nice to have.
Sure. Yeah, agree with that. All right, Jeremy, you've added a question here. Are we allowed to show the Phantom's eyes
in the comic books? You know, we know we're not allowed to see the Phantom's eyes, and so I would like, and a lot of fans were unsure about that with Billy Zane, like, oh, he should be wearing glasses and and stuff like that. I would like to see, and I'm not sure how you would do it, but I would like to be able to see, or not be able to see, the Phantom's eyes once he's sworn the oath. If it's before he's sworn the oath, that's okay. But once he's sworn the oath, I would like to see, you know, whether it's he's wearing the glasses or whatever. But it will be hard to get an actor because his an actor's face is his money. So, yeah, it will be. I think that will be hard.
In my pitch, there is. I actually am faithful to that. Like, you never see the Phantom without his glasses at all. Like, you never see his face. He's the Phantom already in the beginning. He's established. And whatever the flashback shots are, they are always of the Phantom. They are not of him growing up or doing something like that. You know, it's always like something that he's learned or read, or that's it. So he's wearing the mask, but I will also not have him wear white eyelids. I will have him, like, because it's a very dystopian world, you know, like it's that classic mask, but it's what it is in the world.
Yeah, I can see in front of me the scene, like, where someone takes him from the pitch while he's playing football, and he learns about his father's death, and it's like the camera moves up and then it just shades because he's sad, and then from there on you're not showing it anymore. That would be like cool effect.
Yeah.
And like you said, with the actors not showing their eyes, I mean, Karl Urban did it with Judge Dredd in a magnificent way.
It would be a hard no for me, but you can't show his eyes, and I, other than a little bit in episode one, I've pretty much got the Phantom being the Phantom in every episode. I agree with what you said there, though. It would be probably a tough sell to an actor. You might have to put an extra zero on his contract to say, look, we're not going to see your eyes at any stage in this show.
Well, my one was always going to leave that hanging until the first season, whether the 20th Phantom, the previous Phantom was still alive or not. And so I was going to show him, because I think you have to. I don't think you can sell it. For a series that's going to go for 5, 6, 10 episodes or multiple seasons, I don't think you can continue to successfully be clever enough to not show his eyes without it getting old. So I think you're just going to have to swallow the reality that you're going to need to show his eyes. And casting people are going to want to put somebody who the audience is connecting with, and yet the eyes are such a huge part of that. The shots on those TV shows are right in the actor's face. They're looking at the nuances in their facial expression, and the eyes are so much of it. I don't think you would be accused of making the actor look wooden if you couldn't show their eyes. So unless you go the animated version, live action, you're going to have to show his eyes.
Now, Anka, in the 1996 movie, the Singh Brotherhood was changed to the Sang Brotherhood. Is that a problem? Can we, because I think we all made mention of the Singh Brotherhood as enemies in our pitches. Can we have the Singh Brotherhood, or better off to change the name of it?
See, very honestly, like, for me, who's a fan, who understands that these are, you know, material written at some point of time, they are they just chose a name. You want to, it's easy. It can, you know, anybody can take offense. It doesn't take much. You know, somebody who's with the title, like tomorrow, if, you know, it was like my last name, like Mitra, it was like some corporation somewhere used who were dumping toxic waste or something like that. And somebody went in and like, would it bother me? Would it bother my father? I can't speak for him. So that kind of thing. Like, so you never really know. I think people will just, you know, not want to take that risk, because Singh is like a very blanket, like, Sikh title. And you don't want to, like, someone somewhere can just write something and then make a huge mess out of it. You know, that's what. But then again comes the question. They called it the Sang Brotherhood, right? Over there. So what about, like, you know, why is nobody worried how it would, you know, affect a whole other family name, like Sang? It's not like a thing. And then suddenly they made the Pirates Oriental or whatever. It's a world that you just make a decision and go with it based on what you think. I personally wouldn't really be worried about it, because I think that's like literally changing Poison Ivy in Batman to something else, just because, you know, Poison Ivy is a plant thing. You know, you don't want to offend some botanist or somebody by making a plant a villain or something like that.
I pondered that briefly when I was thinking about the Singh Brotherhood, the Singh Pirates becoming the Singh Crime Syndicate. I think as long as you make the people who are part of that group a very international group, like, yes, if every single member of the bad guys were one particular cultural group, then you're going to probably upset that cultural group, and fair enough. But an international syndicate should have international members, and as long as you're seeing a variety of faces and a variety of ethnicities represented in the good guys and the bad guys, then I think you should be fine. Look, I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to the concept. Look, we hope you're as excited as we are about the idea of the TV show coming out. It's in production, whatever that means, whatever stage that means, whether it's 6 months away, 6 years away, I hope it's not that long. But we can't wait for more news about it. In the meantime, we've had our fun speculating on what we'd like to see. As I said earlier, if anyone who's listening to this wants to jump on and let us know which idea they liked, which idea they hated, what they like, what they didn't like, what they do want to see, throw your own ideas into the mix. We'd love to hear it. As I said, on all of the social medias platforms that we've got, feel free to comment on those. Our website's chroniclechamber.com. You can certainly email us more directly, chroniclechamber@gmail.com. We really want to hear your thoughts. And of course, the YouTube channel. If you've sat there watching this, hopefully you've been typing away in the comment section below while we've been going along, and we'll hear from you that way as well. So once again, thank you very much to everybody for listening. Hope you've had a great time, and all looking forward to hearing from the from King Features to find out what's the next thing with the TV series. Until then, we won't hold our breaths, but we will keep our fingers crossed. And thanks very much for joining us, guys. I've been Dan. Happy fandoming, everybody.
Happy fandoming.
Happy fandoming.
Happy fandoming.
Always there, but you won't find the phantom. He finds